This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, this is CoronaCast, a podcast all about the coronavirus where we answer your questions. I'm health reporter Tegan Taylor.
And I'm physician and journalist Dr. Norman Swan. It's Tuesday, the 14th of April.
Norman, how was your long weekend?
Well, it was indoors, apart from the odd spot of exercise, and I had a spot of work to do preparing the health report.
It seems like most Australians have done the right thing by staying at home, just like Dr. Swan. The number of cases also seems to be trending down, but where do we fit in the bigger picture?
Well, the bigger picture is, should we actually go for elimination like New Zealand and actually get rid of the virus altogether rather than flattening the curve and squishing the epidemic out? And if people want to know more about that, because I think it's a very important debate to be had, it might actually be feasible in Australia, like in New Zealand. They can actually download the Health Report podcast from wherever you get your podcasts, because we covered that in detail.
What would it look like if we were going for elimination briefly?
More lockdown, probably a little bit fiercer than we've got now, but not that much. And then putting into place a very extensive testing regime with isolation, quarantine, and contact tracing. And if you really stick to it, social distancing is the thing that makes the difference. And modelling, which we had on the which is on the Health Report podcast this week, shows that if you're at 70% of the population stick to social distancing, we actually don't have much effect at all. Then the rate keeps on going up. But if we get to 80 or 90% of the population socially distancing, then we actually start seeing it heading downwards, which is what they're seeing in New Zealand. And it could possibly be with border controls that we clear the virus from Australia. That is the prospect.
Do we have a time frame?
Well, that's variable. In New Zealand, they're saying 6 weeks. Here, they maybe say about 8 weeks from now.
And do we know if it's actually likely that we're going to achieve this, if that's what we were going for?
That's the debate that we just need to have, and we'll just watch that closely over the next few days. But each day that we delay putting proper lockdown into place, according to the modelling, is a week extension to the epidemic at the other side. So delay for 3 days, it's 3 weeks. So there's no time to lose.
Indulge me one more question. It feels like this debate's popped up really recently, but surely it's something that we knew was a potential avenue from the beginning.
I think one of the problems is that from the beginning, we were stuck in influenza thinking. Our pandemic modelling in Australia and overseas was, we didn't expect this virus. We expected influenza. And influenza is a different virus in terms of control. And you slowly ramp up the controls to influenza. But with a virus like this, you really have to change your thinking and come in hard. And countries which had experienced SARS rather than influenza knew what to do, like Taiwan, like South Korea, like Hong Kong, whereas countries like us, where all we had experienced or thought about was influenza, we were in influenza thinking rather than SARS thinking.
So we have a special guest joining us today on CoronaCast. We've had a lot of questions about mental health, so we thought we'd get along Professor Ian Hickey. He's the co-director at the Brain and Mind Centre at the University of Sydney, and he's going to answer some of your questions. Hello, Ian.
Hello there.
Thanks for joining us, Ian.
Pleasure.
We have a question from Margaret asking, what are the best mental health strategies for people who are self-isolating on their own?
The key here is physical distancing while socially connecting. So if you're on your own, you've got to find ways to stay in contact with people you care about through work, through family, through social connections, sport clubs, churches, community groups. You've got to use all those modern 21st century technologies to get connected. Social isolation is really bad for the mental health of most people.
Which brings me to another question, which I actually got this morning when I was on local radio. An older woman rang in about her son, who has major depression, is living alone, and she's desperately worried about him and not sure what to do. And because he's got major depression, he's not motivated, he's not moving, he's not doing very much. So it's easy to say get socially connected, but he's probably not able to do it. What's the answer here?
We must reach out to those we know are at risk. So it's a really interesting point. If you look at the mental health statistics at the moment, mental health presentations are actually going down, not up, to emergency departments and services. People with major mental health problems are actually staying away during the current shutdown or lockdown. So we need to reach out. If you are a family member, if you are somebody who provides a service, if you're somebody who knows somebody through a non-government organisation, reach out to them to get them to stay connected. On the other side, we've got to lift our game on the services side to stay connected with those that we already know are in trouble. Otherwise, we'll lose them during this period.
Does telehealth help with all this telemedicine that's going on with GPs and others?
It's important to say telehealth is a major change for mental health as well as general practice. So courtesy of the federal government, we now have telehealth items for all of the major mental health professions to reach out and connect. So if you know someone in trouble, encourage them to connect with those new services. Not just using the telephone, get on and use Skype, Zoom, Facebook, FaceTime, whatever that shows the person's face as well as their voice to a mental health professional.
And are there warning signs that you can look for in loved ones who might be doing it tough, Ian?
So the catch-22 here is the biggest warning sign for mental health problems is further social isolation, is disconnecting. So the problem here is we think, oh, that's good. The person didn't go out. They didn't connect. They didn't come around. Oh, that's good. They're following the public health advice. From a mental health point of view, that's actually a problem. So actually losing contact is the biggest warning sign that somebody's really in trouble. So for those of us who have family members, people we care about, people we know about, we need to reach out to them. We also need to get on the blower, get on the phone, get on whatever device you've got and contact the service provider, the GP, the psychiatrist, the psychologist, and make sure that they reach out to those who are already in trouble.
What about family? So we've got Bella asking for recommendations for an app about meditation or mindfulness that the entire family can use. In her family, she's got a six-year-old. The mum and dad are over 50. They're higher risk. They've got demanding jobs. They're homeschooling. What's something that they can all gather around and get a boost from?
Now, I'm a big advocate of digital mental health. Okay, I love the idea that you can use online. But most apps, and there are over 10,000 apps now for anxiety, depression, and other related states, most people download and never use.
Right.
So what you've got to do is actually find a YouTube, a video, a place to go that is more of a service or more engages many people in doing it at the same time. So I suggest going to those services or larger service organizations that actually do more than just download an app. Do yoga together, do mindfulness together, do physical activity together. Join in a particular group. Now's a great time to learn other skills, cognitive behavioral skills, problem solving skills, other things that are actually really good for your mental health, but they're not as simple as just downloading an app. Join a course, join a group, go to one of the respectable organizations that's out there, and the Australian government supports several to provide real treatment or at least real engagement with yoga, mindfulness, physical activity, and those kind of things that are actually really good for your mental health.
So Ian, Kate asks, do you think that meditation can help at a time like this?
We all, I'm afraid to say, need some mindfulness and meditation at this time. It's very hard to stay calm and relaxed. And normally rely on going to work, getting out, going to school, going to education to moderate our own internal anxiety. That's very hard at the moment. So yes, personally, I hate it. But personally, I need to engage in a bit of it now. You need a bit of calm in your head as well as calm in your contact with other people. So now's the time, I'm afraid to say, meditation, physical activity, yoga, mindfulness, we're all going to have to do a bit.
And does it matter which?
It doesn't really matter which. And horses for courses. I made the sort of gratuitous comment, I don't really like mindfulness because I prefer the ones that involve other people or are games or are more physical like yoga, etc. Other people prefer meditation. Other people prefer mindfulness. Others prefer other kind of interactions. Find the one that works for you. Find the one that calms you down, puts you in your own space. The other side of this is maintaining sleep-wake cycle, so being physically active enough during the day so that you can sleep at night without retreating to alcohol and other drugs. I've seen some horrendous figures for increased purchasing of alcohol from alcohol outlets at the moment. Clearly, people are stockpiling for the trouble. The danger is that people start drinking during the day. They start actually getting more bored. They start doing more things that are bad for their mental health.
And we should just plug here the Mindfully podcast that the ABC produces, which you can find in the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So we've got Kirsten asking about how she's actually not having issues with being physically separated from friends. The thing that she's having a trouble with is her friend's incessant desire to meet up online. She's actually really craving alone time, and she's wondering whether that's a healthy thing or whether it actually is a sign that she's not coping as well as she thinks she is.
No, now is a great time for doing some things on your own. If you've always wanted to learn a language, if you always wanted just to read a book in peace, if you've always wanted, I know a friend who's learning to paint right at the moment, learning to draw for the first time. You know, one upside is in the busy modern life we have with so much screen time contact, people haven't had a lot of time to retreat to some of those more classic alone but active. What I'd say about all of those things is they are mentally active but on your own. you know, and that insightfulness, that kind of way of being in your own world can be very healthy as long as you're actually doing something and not just bored and passing time.
Ian, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure, Norman and Tegan.
Ian Hickey, Professor Ian Hickey, who's a co-director of the Brain and Mind Institute at the University of Sydney. We might do this again one day.
Pleasure.
Well, that's it for the CoronaCast today. If you like the show, please give us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. We really love reading them, and it also helps other people find us.
If you like CoronaCast, please tell a friend or two, show them how to listen to us if they've never podcasted before. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and we're also on Spotify. And if you want something to do with the family, don't forget our Together in Art Kids Art Exhibition project that's going on. And if you want to know more about that, go to togetherinart.org.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Till then, bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.